Excuse me, this is the coordinator. Do I have anybody online?
So Margie, you're ready, I take it. So even though everyone's still queuing up, do you want to start the presentation now, or do you want to give it another 5 minutes?
I'm okay with that, unless people in line want me to wait.
Okay, well, let's have you start in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, Margie, please go ahead and start.
All right, hi everyone. I'm gonna.
Sorry, just a minute, Glenn. Are you okay with the recording?
It's a long discussion. I mean, otherwise we're gonna run out of time. An hour.
Could you please start recording?
Just wait 5 seconds.
Certainly, give me one moment, and then I will make an announcement.
Yeah. Okay, you can start, Margie. Thanks.
Well, the question is that all right with the people in line? It's kind of a long discussion, so I don't know if we don't start, whether we'll have enough time to get through everything. Go? Okay. Okay, you guys can listen in. The reason we scheduled this session...
Excuse me, today's call is now being recorded. If you object, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The reason for the session is that there's a motion pending on Wednesday's GNSO Council meeting to endorse the recommendations in the Recommendation 6 report. And so I thought it would be useful for the Council to get an overview of the report so you know what you're voting on Wednesday. And as many of you may recall, the GNSO Council authorized the creation of this cross-community working group that included members of the GAC, the GNSO, and at large to look at the implementation of Recommendation 6. Recommendation 6 is the GNSO Council recommendation, and I've got it posted right here, that essentially says that strings may not be contrary to generally accepted norms relating to morality and public order that are recognized under international principles of law. So what the group did is they spent a fair amount of time analyzing the implementation in an attempt not to revisit the policy, but to develop implementation guidelines to address some of the concerns that had arisen in the community. So I'm going to provide you with an overview of the recommendations. The important thing to note is that the report includes recommendations that had various levels of consensus. So some recommendations had the full consensus of the group. Some recommendations had lesser degrees of consensus, including some that had divergence. And I'd like you to keep that in mind as you think about the motion. At the end of the session, when you take a look at the motion, and the GNSO Council is asked to endorse the report, is it endorsing the full consensus recommendations or the lesser consensus recommendations? But I think that's something that you all might want to think about as you hear the recommendations that I'll go through right now. And because they are so extensive, I'm only going to focus on the ones that say full consensus, although they're all on the documents on the screen, because it would take probably hours to get through all of the recommendations. So essentially, there was consensus in the working group that the implementation model that was proposed by staff was flawed. And so that's why they took the time to look at various ways of improving the implementation of Recommendation 6. And the first topic they looked at was the definition of the morality and public order objection in the applicant guidebook. And there was full consensus to change the name of the objection. And so as you see in the latest version of the applicant guidebook, the name has been changed to limited public interest objection. And that was certainly taken into account. The next recommendation that had full consensus related to the topic of international principles of law. And what the group did was take a look at other treaties that might be included into the African guidebook as examples. And there was full consensus for including these additional treaties into the draft African guidebook. There was also a recommendation that the applicant guidebook refer to principles of international law instead of international principles of law. And there was a lot of debate over whether which term was more appropriate, and the working group felt that the phrase principles of international law was more appropriate, and that received full consensus. As you can see, 2.3 and 2.4, these are recommendations that did not have a consensus. They had strong support. And then 2.5 did have full consensus in the group, and this was related to the topic of government objection for national law. And essentially what the recommendation said was that if individual governments have objections that are based on contradiction of their specific laws, that those objections should be submitted through the community objection procedure rather than standards outlined in Applicant Guidebook 4. In other words, if it's not an international standard but only applies to a specific country, that they should use that approach as opposed to trying to use this exemption. The next series of recommendations related to the quick look procedure in the applicant guidebook, and there was consensus in the group that there should be standards for abusive objections. The theory was that we want to discourage abusive objections, and there was a recommendation that that standards be developed to determine what would be an abusive objection, and to include additional safeguards for discouraging abuse. There was also consensus on that national law is not a valid ground for an objection. And essentially what the recommendation says that in determining whether an objection passes the quick look test, there needs to be an evaluation of the grounds for the objection to see if it's valid. And again, the same principle from before, that national law that's not based on international principles should not be a valid ground for an objection. There was a fair amount of recommendations related to the expert consultation, and this is probably one area where there's a difference in what's in the applicant guidebook or the proposed final guidebook now versus what the recommendations were from the working group. And essentially, there was full consensus regarding the board responsibility, and the statement that received consensus was that the ultimate resolution of the applicability of a TLD subject to a Recommendation 6 objection rests with the board alone and may not be delegated to a third party. There was also consensus related to the board consultation with experts, and this received consensus of the group that under its authority to obtain independent expertise under the bylaws, the board should contract with appropriate experts capable of providing objective advice with regard to objections received through this process. The rest of the recommendations related to expert consultation did not receive full consensus, but this was a topic that the group evaluated quite heavily and spent a fair amount of time analyzing the expert consultation issue. There was also a fair amount of discussion regarding the threshold for board decisions to reject an application based on objections. And there was consensus that there should be a higher standard if the board is going to reject a new TLD string based upon an objection for this limited public interest reasons. And essentially, the working group felt that the board should have a voting threshold of at least two-thirds in order to deny a new string that that has an objection for these grounds. There was also consensus that that approval of a string generally should only require a simple majority of the board, regardless of the input from the experts. So there was a fair amount of discussion regarding the board decisions, and this is one area where there's perhaps a disagreement or a different approach with respect to what's in the version of the applicant guidebook that was just posted. Because, as many of you may know, there was board resolutions over the last 2 months that focused specifically on the board role and in approving new GTLD strings. And the resolution essentially states that the board is not going to be in the position of approving new GTLD strings, that it's going to set up a process for doing so. And so this is a little bit different from what this report was addressing. There was also a fair amount of analysis on the incitement to discrimination criterion. And the original proposal in the applicant guidebook had a criterion that didn't include all of the factors that you see here on 6.1. This recommendation achieved the consensus of the working group, and it included additional standards, including related to I think it's disability, gender, sexual orientation, political or other opinion. Essentially what the working group did was expand the standard to include these additional factors. There was also a bit of discussion on the standard specifically and whether you needed to have incitement and instigation or incitement or instigation. So the question is, what is the standard that is looked at in determining whether there's an objection for discrimination? And the working group felt that the standard should be recited to reflect that it's incitement and instigation of discrimination based on these factors, and that received consensus in the working group. Another topic that was looked at was if there is an objection, what should be looked at? And there was no consensus on this particular topic, although there was strong support for the notion that the experts should only look at the look at their analysis based on the string itself, and it could, if it needed to, use additional context related to the intended purpose of the TLD as stated into the application. But the concern was that they didn't want the experts looking into the content. That was a big issue for this, for the working group. Another issue was universal accessibility objective. They wanted to point out that the working group wants the hopes that this mechanism would help limit blocking of the whole TLDs at the national level. The feeling was that blocking of TLDs is something that should be exceptional and established by due legal process, and hopefully that this, with these recommendations, that there would be far less blocking of TLDs. The working group also made a series of recommendations related to the role of the independent objector. Some of them received various levels of consensus. The one that did receive consensus was 10.2, that essentially said that if requested in writing by the GAC or the at-large ALAC, that the independent objector would prepare and submit a relevant objection. The recommendation was that the independent objector would be a liaison with the GAC and ALAC in drafting an objection. And any objection that came through this process would go through the same processes of objection as from any other source and would have to meet the same standard for success as an objection from any other source. So this was an area where the working group really focused a lot of attention on whether the GAC or ALAC could actually submit objections through the independent objector. The next one is the use of community objections. And again, this was something that the working group took a look at. And the working group noted that the GAC and ALAC or their individual governments would also have the possibility of using the community objection procedure. The report clarified that a community objection procedure can be filed if there's significant opposition to the GTLD's application from a significant portion of the community to which the string is targeted. So that was one area that the group had looked at, was whether at large or GAC could use the community objection procedure. There was also full consensus for the recommendation that if there's an objection filed by the GAC or the at large advisory committees, that there would be no fee or a lower fee. And so that was something that received full consensus in the group. But the group did not reach consensus on whether there should be a lesser standard if an objection is filed by ALAC or the GAC. With regard to the criterion of 4, there was full consensus in the working group to revise the language for criterion 4 to the language that I have posted up here, and this is essentially that a determination that an applied for GTLD string would be contrary to specific principles of international law as reflected in relevant international instruments of law. So the participants in the working group really took a look at the actual language and wanted to make sure it was consistent with principles of international law, and this is why they came up with this recommendation. And then finally, next steps. The working group, although this did not receive consensus, the working group recommended that there would be an implementation team formed by members of the REC 6 working group to provide additional input to implementation staff as they further refine the implementation details. So that's essentially the report. I know it's a lot of information. I encourage each of you to read the report because it explains the rationale for some of these recommendations. The things I'd like to point out is that there was a public comment on the report, and it closed in October of this year. The report actually indicates that each supporting organization and advisory committee that participated in the working group needs to review and comment the recommendations as appropriate. And this is an area that's become discussed a fair amount recently because up until the motion to be heard on Wednesday, there was no endorsement or comment or statement from the GNSO Council with respect to the recommendations in this report. And so the report had called out that would be the next step. The other thing I wanted to point out, and I mentioned this earlier, was that the board in Trondheim resolved, had a series of resolutions related to this topic, and essentially it clarified that although it agrees that ultimate responsibility for the new GTLD program rests with the board does want to rely on the determinations of experts with regard to these issues. So that was something that the board resolved to address. The other thing that the board resolution covered was that it indicated that it will accept the working group recommendations that are not inconsistent with the existing process, as this can be achieved before the opening of the first round of new GTLD applications, and will work to resolve any inconsistencies. And so that's one of the reasons for the consultation that's currently underway with staff and the working group. I've posted here on this slide a little bit of information on the draft, the proposed final applicant guidebook. I don't have a lot of time to go into the details, but it did include some, but not all, of the working group recommendations. There were some recommendations that were viewed as inconsistent with prior processes and prior policies, specifically the explanatory memorandum published by staff with the applicant guidebook notes that the GNSO Council had previously adopted guideline H with respect to the new GTLD program that noted that external dispute resolution providers are to give decisions on objections. And so there's a sense that some of the working group recommendations might have been contrary to guideline H. There's also, as I mentioned before, the resolution with respect to the role of the board. There's a kind of a view that the board would not be involved in the day-to-day approval of these new GTLD strings, so it was unclear how the recommendations from the working group would be consistent with the board resolution that addressed what the role would be with respect to approving new strings. And As a result of the differences between the working group's approach and the board approach, there's a consultation underway. We'll have a session on Monday in the Barahona Room 4 from 5:30 to 7 to kind of explore whether there's additional recommendations from this report that could be included in the new GTLD program. Mike, you have a question? Okay, I think we're pretty much in.
Margie, before...
Sure.
Yeah. Before we, I've got Tim, Mike, any others on the list right now?
Okay.
Alan, okay. Christina, right. Perhaps we could start, though, by having Mary read her motion so everyone can room. Oh, is it up there? Okay.
Yeah, it's up there. I'm essentially done with my presentation. The rest of it's to discuss the motion.
That's fine. Okay. Tim, please go ahead.
Yes. Right there.
a question I had, and for the for those who were in the working group, is if when the motion was drafted or the decision to draft the motion was made, had the working group as a whole reviewed the response from the board that was posted with the proposed final applicant guidebook, the explanatory memorandum that took and kind of laid out, you know, recommendation by recommendation from the working group and what the board's response to each one was. And one of the things I'm concerned about, for example, in regards to, you know, whether the decision to the decision on the objection rests with the board or not, you know, they clearly state that the decision to have it be with an outside party, besides the fact that it's part of the policy that we approved, that it's actually a major or integral part of their risk mitigation strategy, and that if that's going to change, then they need to go back and relook at the costs and certain other implementation aspects. So to me, that sounds like if we push this issue, that we're talking more delay, and it could be considerable delay. Now, that may be irrelevant given some recent letters and things that we've seen. Who knows? But I think we need to take that into consideration when we look at this. And I'm just wondering if the working group has really thought all that through, considered all these comments that the board has made when this resolution was made.
Is that something you're looking for Margie to answer?
Well, we have members on the board. I mean, I don't know, Don, if you want to comment on that. There's members here, Avery.
Mary will. Mary can take it.
Okay.
And I'm not sure I'll provide a full or satisfactory answer. The short answer is that speaking only for, say, my stakeholder group and others within the group I've had consultations with prior to proposing the motion, the short answer is yes. The part of the longer answer is that none of those that I work with or that I talk to wish to delay it unduly, but we simply felt that given there were some issues as to what it was that the GNSO thought about this report and that so far there was thundering silence, that it seemed, given that the initial objective was to have this issue discussed as one of the major issues during this meeting, that it should at least be something open to the GNSO for discussion.
Is that okay, Tim? Yeah. And then I had Mike in the list.
All right. I've got a pretty big question. What precise recommendations is it that your motion is asking us to endorse? That slide had about 30 different ones with varying levels of consensus. So we definitely need to explain in the motion exactly which ones you're proposing that we endorse and that we ultimately vote on to endorse.
The language of the second resolve clause took a little bit of anguish. The hope is that we would endorse all the recommendations, including the ones that did not achieve full consensus. The reality may be that that's not possible, but the process would be that we at least discuss that along the lines that you've suggested, so that at the very least, the endorsement could be of the, at least, but hopefully not just the least, but at least the full consensus recommendations.
I mean, so you are anticipating, I guess, in addition to this session, because it seems like it's going to take a long time to list through all of those resolutions and kind of decide which stakeholder groups support which ones. It just seems like a big mess. I'm concerned. I don't understand how we can vote on this on Wednesday.
Just to take a step back, though, I mean, the documents, the recommendations were available to everybody some time ago. There was a public comment period. I understand that the motion preferably, ideally, should have come in a little earlier, but the reality of all the issues we're dealing with. And so the hope is that during the 8 days, whatever discussions occurred within each group and committee prior to this meeting can really be consolidated into a GNSO council action.
I have Alan next.
I actually had two questions for Margie. I'm not sure if you're just talking about the resolution, then I can defer them.
No, go on.
Okay. Margie, two things in regard to the Trondheim resolutions, because I think it comes down to how closely they followed the working group. 2.7 resolution says that the board will have staff processes to execute contracts and delegate new GTLDs. What does that imply about the opposite? In other words, does that mean staff will have authority to do that and to reject them, or that the approval for staff is going to be only for accepting, which means the board still has to reject? And
yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have enough background to be able to answer that question.
Okay,
it may be a question you have for Kurt tomorrow.
Okay,
because I just don't have that level of understanding of what the implication was.
It's not a subtle difference. And it comes down to a critical issue of, are they following our advice that they will have to reject applications or not? Okay, thank you. I'll leave the other one also.
Christina.
I have three questions. The first one deals with, and I'm not really quite sure who to direct this to, but whoever can best answer it should feel free. With regard to the recommendation 4.1, that had full consensus that ultimate resolution of the admissibility of a TLD subject to a Rec 6 objection rests with the board alone and may not be delegated to a third party. As a practical matter, what does that mean? Does that mean that the board has to sift through all of the arguments and evidence and whatnot? Does it mean that they can consult with an expert but that they themselves have to make the decision? I'm just trying to get a sense as to what it means. And because of the potential implications it has, frankly, for the other objections as well.
And to the extent that I'm mischaracterizing something that the other members of the working group present feel, or that I'm not explaining it fully or adequately, I'm happy for others to jump in. So for some of us, at least, the starting point is this notion of the board's ultimate responsibility. And there was language in the previous iteration of the draft applicant guidebook that said something, I don't know the exact language, or something along the lines of the board will accept the decision of this, that, and the other. And that troubled a lot of us. And so this was an attempt to try and expand on that to, first of all, specify the board's ultimate responsibility, but secondly, not that the board needs to sift through every argument, but that they should and they probably will use the services of experts, the eminent jurists, judges, and so forth. And we had a long discussion in the group as to whether those experts should be providing recommendations, advice, or something along the lines of a binding decision. And the thought for many of us was that they would provide some kind of recommendation or advice, which the board would then consider. And I think many of us accept that the reality is that the board will probably follow the recommendations or advice in most cases, but that they should acknowledge that they actually have to go through at least what that decision is, given the ultimate responsibility.
The second point is with regard to 7.1, I'm not at all clear, and I haven't really found a dictionary yet that's clarified it. What exactly is the intended difference between incitement and instigation?
Okay, I guess it's me again. The thought was that instigation, which comes more or less from the criminal law sphere, implied some kind of more active or higher level or standard. That's not helpful, is it?
I guess it would be if there was any kind of, you know, just historic reference documentation, because like I said, I'm not really finding the difference, and if the two words meet essentially the same thing, I don't really see the point, because then people are going to assume that if you use different words, you meant different things, and then you end up in a... Anyway.
I mean, there are some emails that we can probably pull up in the course of this week, but the idea or the understanding was that it had to be something more than just, say, a couple of mere words, that the idea was there had to be something pretty serious and substantial.
And then the last question goes to recommendation 2.5, which deals with that if a government has an objection based on national law, then they should avail themselves of the community objection procedure. And I was curious as to what extent the group had consulted with either the GAC as the GAC or more broadly, because it's my personal sense that there probably aren't a whole lot of governments that are willing to kind of suborn their national sovereignty for purposes of participating in a community objection process. And if that's the case, then this recommendation is frankly irrelevant, in which case there needs to be some other process for dealing with that scenario.
So let me try and do this in a coherent and logical fashion. I think the initial, possibly the greatest concern on a point like this was that national law not be the basis for a Rec 6 objection, and everything proceeded from there. And if it's not national, it had to be in principles of international law, which would be reflected in some national laws but not all. So the fear would be that there would be some national laws which may, for example, be somewhat more repressive than most, and that governments might try to use that as a basis for a Rec 6 objection. That was the origin, that was the starting point. Beyond that, then the question was, there were some concerns and sensitivity issues that members of the GAC had brought up in conversations and discussions. Where would those go? And I think that's kind of the gist of your question. And the only other existing process at this point was the community objections process. And in talking about that, I think this CWG had kind of a threshold issue in that we were not tasked to look at the community objections process. So we could only look at what it was, as in the applicant guidebook. We weren't able to make recommendations to improve that, expand that, or change that. The final point is that there were some government officials who participated on the CWG, but not as official representatives of their government. My understanding, I think the understanding of many members of the CWG, was that they participated to give us some sense of what a government-based perspective might be on either some of the proposals or some of the recommendations. So I guess the formal answer is that this is not something that the GAC has talked about formally with the CWG, but that to the extent that certain members of the CWG brought a government-based perspective, the group felt that this was within the existing framework of limitations about the most realistic proposal that we could give in order to move the process forward.
Okay, I have Richard, Tim, Edmund, Jeff, and Jamie. I'd just like to say that I'm slightly confused about what we're doing here, to be honest, because if we're going through discussing this report, which is fine, then it's going to take us a long time. And I'm trying to understand if we're trying to, as a council, trying to discuss whether this motion itself is something that we want to go forwards with or not. I mean, the motion's there, but do we want to vote on it or not vote on it or vote against it or whatever? But so I'm slightly confused about what you're doing.
I was going at it from, I mean, in a very, very micro way. I mean, those are questions that have come to me that I'm trying to get answers from so that on constituency day I can go back and say, okay, here are the issues that everybody had with this, here are the answers I have, setting aside the process issue of how does the GNSO deal with some kind of cross? Yeah, so it's both.
Okay. Richard?
Yeah, so I just wanted to speak to 4.1 briefly, and Mary addressed it pretty well, I think. But I think a few people have asked about it. So I just want to sort of reemphasize what Mary said, that there's a real breadth of opinion in the group as to what that 4.1 should mean. Some people believe that the board should, in fact, sit and evaluate every evaluation themselves, every objection themselves, and be the determiners. And others, myself included in the second category, viewed it in a very broad way, that the ultimate responsibility for resolution rests with the board, and that they can delegate that as they see fit. So really a complete breadth, and jump in if you disagree, but a complete breadth of views on that. And I think it would not have had consensus had it been written in a way that made the board a very active, direct participant.
Thanks, Richard. Tim?
Yeah, I think Mike expressed a lot of the concerns I wanted to bring up. So I'll just say that what's difficult with this motion is that, you know, our constituency may have felt, or our stakeholder group may have felt one way at one point, or those within it. Then we've seen the board's responses at various points. And so that very clearly has changed at least some views. And so now we have this very short time frame. You know, we got this motion Wednesday night. And for most of us in North America, leaving the very next morning to come here. So there's been no time for any kind of stakeholder group discussion. So we've got constituency day, as well as, you know, whatever time we can pull together in between. So I think it's going to be very difficult to gather, you know, enough information in our stakeholder group to say, yeah, this is how we feel as a stakeholder group and to feel comfortable voting on this. So I just want to put that out there. It doesn't mean we won't come constituency day be able to come to some answer on this. I don't know. But I think it is going to make it very difficult.
Yeah, go on, Mary.
I understand that, Tim. So I guess what I'll say for now is I will ask the councillors and all the SGs and members present to consider the potential effect that either silence on the part of the council or a downvote on the part of the council will do to the standards in what will be the final guidebook. So given that we were told that this issue would preferably be resolved and decided by the end of this meeting, I would just ask you all to bear that in mind as you go into your discussions.
I mean, that's the other thing, is I think, you know, some of us were expecting that it would be resolved at the end of this meeting. I think other things have happened besides this that may bring that into question. But if that was the case, you know, us making some sort of vote on Wednesday on something like this, you know, what is the likelihood that the board is going to be able to, in, you know, less than 48 hours, turn around and make a different decision than they've already clearly spent a lot of time laying out to us at least twice?
Edmund.
Yeah, I wanted to sort of follow up on what Mike said and Stefan, you mentioned. I sort of want to understand what the motion really means in terms of are we trying to ask whether we would accept the whole report, you know, including the consensus points and also, you know, the points where it's varying degrees of support and just report that to the board. Right, that's sort of what we're looking at, and not trying to go, you know, one item by item, which I guess goes back to one of the things that we talked about earlier on, which Jeff mentioned. So just want to get a clarification of what we want to achieve here.
Well, I think there's two levels to this discussion. There's one about the report itself and the way the working group itself has functioned, and then there's Mary's motion, which is, as you know, this was a cross-community working group, and only one of the groups so far has endorsed the final report. So the question that's been asked, and Mary, you'll step in if I'm not correct, is does the GNSO want to do that as well?
And, you know, speaking very frankly, to follow up my earlier response, I mean, the hope is that the council will vote to endorse the report, or maybe there might be time for discussion of at least the full consensus recommendations that were presented by Margie. To the extent that councillors, after consulting with their groups, would like to fiddle and twiddle with my language, I would like to say I am more than happy for that to happen, because that is far more preferable than a downvote.
Can you say that last sentence again?
Jeff? Can I just quickly, sorry. So does that mean there are really, you know, three choices? One is to accept that one. The other is to accept what Margie says, only the consensus part, and then the third is to not vote or downvote it. Am I hearing that correctly? Or?
Yeah. There's a motion in front of us. We can vote for or against it. That's what we have with every motion. We can also amend the motion, and that's what Mary's saying. She's saying she put the motion forward to get it in the required deadline, and if people want to, you know, add to it, she's more than happy for people to try and twiddle and diddle with it or whatever. Jeff.
Yeah, so I have a couple questions, because I'm really confused, and maybe just in general. Maybe it's a tea I had. I want to ask a question, then I have a comment, and it's maybe to Margie, just to clarify. So when you say that there are things that are inconsistent with the board resolution, that's ICANN staff's interpretation of what they believe is inconsistent with what was, right? Because it's not the board didn't come out and say we believe it's inconsistent with it, right? It's staff.
Well, I believe we've had guidance from the board, so I mean
everything's kind of
there's these resolutions with out there, and then it gets interpreted in the materials that get published. And just to clarify a statement I made earlier, we published this explanatory memorandum that explained it. That was a staff document. It wasn't a board document.
Right.
So,
but everywhere that it says we didn't do this in AGB5 because it's inconsistent, that's staff's interpretation of what's inconsistent, and therefore it wasn't in the guidebook.
I don't believe we actually said that. Maybe Dan can clarify as he's here. I think we said we adopted some of the recommendations that were, that could be fit in, and that we were going to do this consultation to see what additional recommendations could be incorporated. So I think the memorandum was kind of pointing out that the work hadn't been completely done on this particular topic. I don't know, Dan, do you want to comment on that?
I think that's right, Margie. I think if you go back to the board resolution in Trondheim, it's a little clearer. I think the board got the CWG report, I think, like on the eve or right before the Trondheim resolution, and they looked at it and said that was the instruction to staff, and then the explanatory memo is as Tim's pointed out and as Margie's kind of clarified, it's 36 pages of staffs going through and looking through, responding to every one of the community working group recommendations and noting where we thought it was consistent and putting rationale why some things were picked up, why some things need further discussion. And the first page of the explanatory memo says this is a preliminary response to the community working group, and staff has already put some of the recommendations into applicant guidebook, the version that got posted, and we've scheduled a consultation here on Wednesday to try and pick up others.
Okay, yeah, I mean, because the basis of my question is we can go through, and even if we endorse the things that have full consensus, if it was inconsistent, then the board's going to ignore it anyway, right? I mean, that's what they're saying. And I have a whole other issue, which is not really, it's kind of tangential, which is, did the board made some proclamation in Trondheim, and we absolutely have to follow it because they came down off the mountain and said it? I mean, that's the way it said, well, our Trondheim resolution said this, so anything that's we don't agree with, we're not going to adopt. Well, okay, isn't that obvious anyway? But my point is that, Mary, this whole thing is really confusing because there's some that have full consensus, some that have consensus. I don't even necessarily know, like, if some GAC representatives disagreed with something but it still had consensus, to me that would weigh heavily since it pretty much involves governments. It's very hard to make to weigh the balance of which recommendations the council should consider. If we consider any, I would recommend only those with full consensus and only those that are consistent with the previous versions of the guidebook. That should eliminate a bunch of them, and then we have a concrete set that we could actually consider at this meeting. Otherwise, everything else just seems like a waste of resources and time.
And there's 5 minutes left of that. Tim, you just wanted to make a clarification, and then I'll go to Jamie, Philip, Mike, and Avery.
There are actually three choices with this motion. I mean, we can vote in favor, we could vote it down, or we could decide that we're not ready to vote on it at all. Not making a statement one way or the other, but just putting it off, continuing the discussion. And the only thing I want to quickly point out about what Jeff was saying is that I'm still not convinced that the working group as a whole continues to have full consensus. That concerns me. There's been a lot said, that I would want to know before we went forward.
Thanks. Jamie?
I have a specific question. I don't know if it's for Maggie or to Mary. And referring government objections or specific government objections to the community objection process, that is already in place in previous versions. Did the staff or the working group have the time to evaluate if there is not necessary minor or major adjustment to this process? Or it fits well to government, individual government objections, because I'm not sure of the...
There was some discussion within the working group. And like I said just now, I think we were not just time limitations, but in terms of limitations of the community objection procedure, which we were not tasked to look at. There was consensus ultimately, and there was participation by a wide variety of members from various backgrounds in all the discussions, including this one, that it would fit sufficiently well as to be something that would be workable. And that is my interpretation of the view of the group. My own personal view is that that may well be one of the things that under the board resolution might be inconsistent, more so than some others. And that was my personal view to follow up on a conversation we had this morning.
Philip?
Thank you. I think Mary has rather brilliantly presented us just now with an example of what we were struggling with earlier this morning, which is what exactly is the role of council. Because this particular working group, of course, is a relatively new creature. It's not just a GNSO policy development group. It's a cross-constituency, a cross-SO group that was absolutely not policy development. It was intended to be focused on implementation. So I think going back to Mike Rodenbach's original question, what exactly would council be voting on is very pertinent. Because as this is not policy, and we're not trying to filter through what the community view of policy is, to my mind, any vote on this would not be saying we approve of all of this or some of this or whatever, because that work has been done and was trying to provide some guidance on a very difficult issue on implementation to the board. So to my mind, this comes back to the role of council as managing the process, and that the quality of your vote, if it was to endorse the report, is basically saying we endorse the process which led to the report and which has led to conclusions, some of which are supported by full consensus, some of which have less support. And I think that's the best you can do, and I think maybe that should be clear in the report, in the motion.
Thanks, Philip. Mike?
Actually, coincidentally, my comments just kind of dovetail in with what Philip was saying there. And I'm very concerned about this as a precedent, that the council is looking at this community working group work, for one thing, and what that really means for the future. I was really concerned when another one of these community working groups kind of sprung up a couple of meetings ago about the issue of, I forget, some of the new TLD issues that Anthony Moncouvering was running down. And the same thing happened. It's sort of like this ad hoc group forms, and everyone runs around and discusses this issue, and then the board's voting on it. And, you know, it hasn't gone really through the council, and it's just troubling to me, the precedent. And I guess I'm worried also that this entire discussion has just kind of been moot, because when you read the clear language of this resolution, it sounds like the board's already decided to accept all of the recommendations that are not inconsistent with the process. So what are we doing?
Can I just get to Avery and Marilyn, and then perhaps you can get those? Avery?
Thank you. First of all, I actually think that the subject is still more open than some of the discussion is assuming. I mean, we've continued having discussions in the group trying to make sure that all the ideas that were there were understood, were there clearly, and those conversations have been going on. It also, in the board resolution, does sort of indicate that until the first round starts, the issue does not need to be closed. I think what Philip said about endorsing the work, I think when you're looking at these cross-community things, you're looking at something where each of the groups, and as this one was not started ad hoc, nor were some of the others started ad hoc. There may be some that were. But there was council discussion beforehand, and then the report did come back to council, and council's now basically, you're going to make a choice. Is it something we want to endorse or not? I sort of think what Philip is pointing at, that you're endorsing the work, you're not necessarily going to go through and pick through each thing. I'm hoping that you do endorse it. I think also in thinking about the endorsements, a lot of people have been trying to sort of second guess what it is the GAC might think about this, what it is the GAC might think about that. And I think that as the third party in this joint thing, it's the GAC that needs to figure out whether they want to endorse it and in what respect or not. And so I'm really, I do hope that you endorse this as something that the board and the staff need to continue taking seriously and need to consider fully in putting together the final applicant guidebook and the way in which Rec 6 objections are dealt with. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. I'm going to cut it off after Marilyn, and we'll then move into the GNSO working group guidelines session, and the after that, the JAS and vertical integration, which will both be chaired by Olga. So, Marilyn?
My comments, I think, will follow Philip's and Avery's and be generally supportive of the points that Philip made. But I'm also going to note that I think the practical reality is that we're going to have more topics that do require cross-SO, cross-AC interaction. And I wouldn't like to see the council avoiding the ability to contribute to the process by which topics are considered. So I think this is a good, it's important to show support for this group, and I think Philip's approach is a good one. If it needs a little tweaking on language, then maybe that could be done ahead of time so constituencies are looking at the same language on Tuesday. But I do think we don't want the council to be, we don't want GNSO as a participant to be left out of the fact that these groups are going to continue to emerge and continue to work, whatever the topic is. We may feel we need to provide some limitations, but I think that's the topic of another document that Liz Gaster had developed and circulated, and that would be future work, I think, right?
Okay, thanks. We'll cut it short there. Olga, can I move on to you and the working group guidelines? Thanks.